Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Of Cinder and Madness by Nicole Zoltak. Narrated by Lucy Rayner. Volume 1. Of Cinder and Madness. Chapter 1. Fantasia. Chapeau Chateau. The 1st of April, 1096. The stories about her have been greatly exaggerated. Yes, she is beautiful, with wavy blonde hair, big blue eyes, and flawless skin. But her charming facade is a lie, a mask, a deceit. Yes, yes, I'm sure you think me merely jealous. I'm not. I'm the victim, and I can prove it. You see, Eleanor deserves to be locked away. My, she even deserves to be killed. But wait, I apologize. I'm getting rather ahead of myself. It seems like only yesterday I married for a second time. While my first husband, Olivier, had been a good and kind man, I had not given him my heart. I had married him because my mother insisted I do so. My father had died, and we needed to be supported. All in all, I will always remain forever grateful that I did not balk at my mother's request. Olivier gave me two of the most precious gifts in the world, my daughters, Marguerite and Madeleine. Without them, I would have been lost once he died. And now that Jacques is gone too. Jacques, Eleanor, his daughter by his first wife, Gabrielle. By all means, Gabrielle sounds like she had been a perfectly lovely and delightful lady. How the two of them gave birth to such a monster, I cannot begin to fathom. She is nothing like her father, and from what Jacques told me, she is nothing like her mother either. Oh, Jacques, I loved him desperately, despite myself. I still love him, despite his dying after 3 years of pure bliss. Back then, Eleanor had been different. Back then, she had been more human. I'm on my way up the stairs to the tower. She enjoys it up there for some reason. I think it's to spy on us. She certainly watches my movements all the time. Watching for what, I'm not certain, and I do not know if I wish to learn her reasoning. Reason. That is a quality she lacks. In some ways, I wonder if she remains a child yet. She is only 16, after all. Then again, some ladies are married off at 14, or even 12. The circular stairs wind ever upward, and my soft shoes feel every crumbled bit. The way is worn over the years, and one of the stairs is broken in half completely. Huge chunks of the stone are missing as well. A small arched window allows a measure of light to pour through, glowing the dark stone a bluish hue. From here, I can spy Eleanor's wicked tree growing out of her mother's grave. If I could tear it down. I shudder. The memory of the blast, of that shrill death cry. Our grommet attempted to chop it down. The tree itself attacked him in a most terrifying way. I was within the chateau at the time. The huge glow of obnoxious orange-green light from the window blinded me. When the light faded, Kaplan was gone. His body had vanished. But the echo of his cries remained and haunted me for weeks after. The tree itself is actually rather lovely to gaze upon. Still, I turn my gaze away to the second gravestone, which belongs to Jacques. So strong and true and kind and good. Handsome too, yes. A jewel among men. But it was his eyes that captured my own at first meeting. His eyes, A beautiful, sparkling blue, shining ever so brightly on our glorious wedding day. There could not have been a single cloud that day, for the sun lent us her full golden face. I feel, because I do not know for certain, I could not look away from my groom. The scent of wildflowers and lilacs flitters to me on the soft breeze through the window. I inhale deeply, closing my eyes, reminded all the more of our wedding day. Our girls, all three of them, wore the same styled dresses, although in different colours. My Marguerite was in purple, like the flowers us women all carried. My Madeline was in green, like the beautiful greenery of spring around us. His Eleanor in red, like blood. Their trumpet sleeve dresses were worn over a farthingale. False undersleeves matched the forepart. All of them looked so lovely. At the time, I could not have been happier about the union of our families into one. My own dress was tight-waisted, with a high-necked white chemise with various shades of blue. My slashed and puffed sleeves completed the look. My long dark hair was not in the heart-shaped style I normally wore. For once, I wore it loose around my shoulders and down my back. The jeweled wreath of orange blossoms complemented my green eyes, or so Jacques told me the moment our hands joined before the minister. We were married without much fuss. Jacques Chapoux, Baron of Chapoux, had been a step below my first husband, Olivier Delacroix, Vicomte of Vial. I had not cared about either title. My mother had hoped for higher than Olivier for me, but I had not caught another's eyes. Jacques' mother had been a lovely lady. Unfortunately, she died shortly before we wed. As my parents are also deceased, we only had ourselves, our daughters, and the minister present. We had no need for a huge celebration. Why, we had the rest of our lives to live together and celebrate. Oh, how little we knew how short our time had been. But that day had been glorious, without a worry or a care. None of the fright I've been living with ever since Jack died. Ever since Eleanor. I saw subtle signs over the years, but I never truly knew what she was capable of. I'm not even certain if I fully understand now. For perhaps the first time ever, I do not feel like weeping as I think about my beloved. Perhaps it is because I'm thinking mostly about our wedding and our happiness. Normally, I can only focus on my grief and on my guilt. Yes, yes. Think of the happy days. Forget the lonely nights. Remember, and he will never truly be gone. Another breeze blows by, the floral scent bringing a now rare smile to my thin lips. A glorious spring day we had wed, much like today, actually. Yes, the first day of May in 1092 had been the most wonderful day in my life. Truly, that entire year had been the most blessed. For this past year, since Jack has passed, however, the kingdom has turned dark over our small corner. Fantasia seems to be caught in troubled times. But no. No, I will deal with this. Eleanor is my stepdaughter. She is my charge. I will deal with her accordingly. Her actions have been terrible, and so she has forced my hand to be equally as terrible in return. Moving faster now, but not running, I ascend the rest of the stairs. Eleanor stands at the window, her back to me, hands clasped, ringing. Her accursed devil birds flitter about so frantically, their dark feathers fall about her, almost giving her a cloak or shield. For a moment, I stand there, transfixed by the spectacle. The things she can do. Her terrible wrath. I think some might stem from grief. But there's more to it. There must be. guilt, perhaps. Could it be that she... No. She would never. Then again, she had tried to poison her stepsisters and me. A wicked, horrid girl. I've tried to help her. The sun knows I've tried. I'm at my wit's end. If I cannot change her for the better, then I can shield her away from the world. I can shield her away from my family and myself. My hand slips into the pocket of my long satin dress. The coldness of the key sends a shiver down my spine, and I gasp slightly. That sound is enough. Her birds react to my presence, and she turns to face me. Our eyes lock. Her blue orbs look nothing like her father's. So hard, so unfeeling, so cold. The air rushes out of me as the world seems to stop. She's waiting for me to speak, to yell at her, to punish her. Yes, she must realize that what she has done is horrible, despicable. She must realize that the punishment is her doing, her fault. But I can't help hesitating. Am I certain there is nothing else I can do? If there is anything I should have done? Is it possible that the blame does not rest on her shoulders, but mine? My indecision creates a bubble. The birds hover in midair, awaiting their dark princess's command. Yes, she is not dark in appearance, fair on all accounts. But her heart is far darker than anyone realizes. If I have to venture a guess, far darker than even I suspect. No, I must be firm in my resolve. Now is not the time to allow grief and despair to color my actions. She must be held accountable for her own actions. It is not my hand forcing this upon her, but her own hand. Shoving aside my doubt, cloaking myself in my fear, I remove the key from my pocket. At once, her eyes flash with understanding. A flicker of an emotion, fear of her own, or maybe acceptance. Then her birds swoop toward me as one massive swarm. I barely have time to close the door and lock it before they slam against it. Thud, thud, thud! A minute passes, and then another, and I lean against the heavy locked door with my eyes closed. It's done. She's barred. She's too far up. Her birds never leave her side for long, and only one at a time at that. We'll be fine now. We'll be safe. I hope. I pray. I fear. Chapter 2. Fantasia. A field near Chapu Chateau. 1091. Winter had not yet completely abandoned the land on that fateful day. Nevertheless, it was a lovely day. Jacques would be arriving shortly. We had arranged for us to all eat lunch together. I rushed to have the scullery maids wrap up the meal and place them in baskets we could bring. Then I asked the servants to fetch some blankets and our coats. Yes, asked, and not ordered. My mother had taught me that servants were people too, and that I should consider their plight in life. One day, after she found me being overly harsh with my maid, she had the maid act as a lady. She forced me to be her maid. Now, that was a humbling experience. At first, the maid Colette did not know what to ask of me. My mother helped her. Soon I was dressing Colette in my gowns, even though she was a far smaller girl than I was. I tried to fix her hair with pins, which was much harder than I ever could have anticipated. Actually, it was rather fun, and my mother's lesson has never left me. Colette is still my... No. No longer. I sent her away when... After. In my heart, she remains my servant and my friend. The servants and maids rushed about to fulfill my requests, as I hurried my daughters along myself. I hoped and prayed to the sun that Jacques might have brought his daughter along. When the butler opened the door and admitted the two of them, I was awash with relief. For a year now, Jacques had been courting me. I hoped each and every day that today would be when he would ask me to join our families. I never felt the need to compare him to Olivier, as I hadn't loved Olivier as I had Jacques. All I saw was him and his devotion, to his daughter and to me, and by extension, to my daughters. I clasped his hand in one of Eleanor's. Thank you. Thank you for coming. A nod to the butler had him continuing to hold the door open. Eleanor's eyes opened wide.
Aren't we staying here?
She asked, confusion plain on her sweet features. She was a precious 11-year-old, although there were times when the child bewildered me. A choice phrase or a certain look would cross her features. I would have no idea what she was thinking or the reasoning behind her actions. Honestly, this remains the case. My gaze shifted above her head to meet her father's. A warm smile curled my lips. I thought we could take advantage of this wonderful day and go to the wild flower field near your chateau.
All the way back home?
Eleanor pouted. I'm sorry. It's a little bit of a ride. I sank to be level with her and pointed to my daughters. Marguerite was the same age of Eleanor, while Madeleine was 2 years their junior. Would you like to ride in our carriage? I'm sure the girls would love that. Her eyes turned suspicious.
All four of us?
Of course.
But then my father will be alone.
We can't have that now, can we? A puzzle, as the five of us will not fit in either carriage together. I can solve that. Jacques to the rescue, as always. I shall drive the carriage.
You know how to?
Eleanor clapped her hands. My grin grew. Already I knew this ability of his, but I certainly hoped there remained more for me to learn about this gentleman. And so the five of us took a single carriage, the one I inherited from Olivier, back to the field. Marguerite and Madeleine at once helped me, without my asking, to arrange the blankets on the grass. Soon we were all enjoying a delicious spread of cheeses, breads, wine, sauces, and more. All delicious. Even better, the girls were getting along just fine. I leaned my head against Jacques' shoulder and sighed. What's wrong? He asked.
Oh, nothing.
A sound of contentment then.
Yes, indeed. I'm very content.
I must confess, I'm not. I pulled away, confused. The girls had gotten up to chase butterflies, but Eleanor quickly abandoned my girls to touch the flowers. They were so happy and carefree, as I was just a moment ago myself. Now, for some reason, I felt beside myself, alone and uncertain. What's wrong? I returned his question. Eleanor. The girl was walking over to us, holding some flowers. She was deliberately shoving her thumb against the thorns, marking them each red with her blood. Are you all right? I hurried to my feet and met her halfway. When I examined her thumb, she had no scratch, no scar. The skin was perfect and unblemished. For the next hour, we fussed over the girl. He returned her to the chateau under the watchful eye of her faithful lady's maid, the one who attended her mother. Only then did he pull me aside. Again, the coldness of dread wrapped itself around my face. I endeavored to build a wall of ice around my heart to shield myself from what I feared was about to come.
but I should never have feared. I am not content, for we are not together each day and each night. He pulled my hands to his heart, and through his fine clothes, I could feel his racing heart. I would love nothing more than to spend every moment with you.
Then it is settled. We are to be wed.
Yes, of course.
And we sealed it with a kiss. As I climbed into the carriage to return to what would soon be my old chateau, I spied Eleanor. The girl was watching us from a window. She waved, and when I waved back, I swore I saw blood dripping from her thumb. How? Why? What? So many questions surrounded her. I eased back into my cushiony seat, content that one day soon I would learn the answers to all of them. I vowed to become as much a mother to her as my own girls. Little did I realize how much I would fail on all accounts. Eleanor remains very much a mystery. Perhaps I could have tried better to mother her, but the girl would not be mothered. She would not listen. And the unexplainable phenomena? They continue even now. Chapter 3. Fantasia. Chapeau Chateau, 1096. Descending the stairs is a terror, more than ascending them had been. Before, I knew that Eleanor had sought refuge there. I hoped and prayed to the sun that she would not harm me. And she hadn't. Still, I locked her away, locked her up. I transformed her into a prisoner within her own home. I am the one who does not belong here. Not without Jack. Everything here reminds me of him. The moss growing upon the chateau, he hoped to have his servants remove once the weather turned warm. The candles burning for illumination, the last of his stock. The furniture, the decorations, the paintings. Within my bedroom, his clothes still hang in the armoire as if waiting patiently for their master to return. Oh, Jack, I know you loved her as much as you loved me. I tried to love her, I truly did, but she would not let me. Is it fair to blame her? Yes. She is 16, and old enough to have already started a family of her own. Regardless, I should have reached out more. That remains on me, not her. A mother's job is to never give up, to always have faith. The sun has long since stopped shining on me, though. Oh, Jack, have I failed you? As if the sun hates me for mistreating my stepdaughter, she hides her glorious face behind dark storm clouds. With a roar, the clouds open. Sheets of rain fall, thick and heavy. The sound of it hitting the chateau, loud, harsh, grating. The call of the rain draws me closer to the window nearest the front door. Far to the left are the graves, the one obscured by the tree. A twinge of regret fills me. I'm a coward. As much as I would like to visit Jacques' grave, rain or no rain, I dare not leave the chateau. Even though I can hear my daughters walking about upstairs, talking in hushed tones, I feel completely isolated. The fear, though, that is what I feel most of all. Here I remain. For now. Chapter 4. Fantasia. The Market Between Vial and Chapeau. 1090. The first time I had met Eleanor had been actually a rather pleasing experience. Jacques had just started to court me. He feared Eleanor was not ready, considering her mother had died half a year ago. If I had met her first. But no. Eleanor had not lost all sense of humanity. Not yet. As a result of his unease, he allowed her to go to the market alone,
and suggested I bump into her. The 10-year-old was easy to spot as soon as I entered the market. She was the one all alone, gaping at every stall she passed, even the one selling fish. When she halted beside one where the merchant sold jewelry, I finally made my approach. I'd been watching her from afar for nearly half of an hour. Her fingers are reaching for a blue beaded necklace. "Oh, that's beautiful," I smiled at her. "It matches your eyes." She stared at me, unblinkingly. For a moment, my hope that we could make some headway evaporated away. I was filled with a terrible sense of worry. Jack had mentioned Eleanor so many times already that I felt as if I already knew the girl. She, however, knew nothing about myself. If I did not make a good first impression with her, I worried my chances with Jack would be dashed. He seemed to be a kind and caring man. Of course he would hold his daughter closer to his chest than a lady, even the lady he was courting. I did my best to push aside my worry and to give in to hope. I granted her a comforting smile. "I tend to like jewelry that is more..." My hand on my chin, I eyed the pieces. Then I pointed to the ugliest one there, a horrid collaboration of orange and red that truly looked hideous. Thankfully, the merchant was helping another lady, because I surely did not wish to purchase this necklace. Eleanor wrinkled her nose. I frowned. "You don't like it? What about this one?" Now I pointed to a yellow bracelet and a purple necklace. She shook her head slightly, but cracked a smile. "This." Finally, I opted to select a blue bracelet and an orange pair of earrings. Eleanor giggled.
"Don't you know that that..."
She trailed off. "Oh, you're right." I handed her the blue bracelet. "That will look much better on you." She smiled, but returned the item to the table.
"I don't..."
The girl leaned close and whispered,
"I don't have a lot of money."
Should I buy it for her? I better not. Jacques hadn't mentioned anything about her needing new jewelry. I leaned closer and whispered, "I don't have a lot either."
"No?"
Her gaze took in my appearance. While I wasn't wearing one of my fanciest gowns, I was not in a simple dress. My sleeves were long and trumpet, the skirt full.
"No."
I shook my head ruefully. "I'm afraid I spent it all on drinking chocolate. Have you had any?"
"No."
Her eyes widened, bigger than the bracelets at the stand. I motioned for her to join me. She didn't hesitate to fall into step beside me, and we passed several stalls for clothing, hats, or food. The market was busy this time of year, and we had to maneuver around people as we went. Grinning, I continued, "It is delightful, although I typically only drink it in the winter, when the snow is falling and the fire is roaring. Otherwise, it simply does not taste right."
"That sounds delicious,"
she said. "Oh, it is." I was pleased to find her so agreeable.
"I think my mother drank that once."
My heart leapt into my throat, and I stumbled over a step.
What should I say?
Should I ask about her mother? Or should I ignore the comment? No, ignoring was never the way. Worry twisted my stomach into knots. Finally, I ventured, "She must have drunk it many more times than that. Drinking chocolate is meant to be, well, drunk." She paused.
"I don't know if she did, but she never will again."
"Oh, child." I wanted to pull her into my arms for an embrace. Concerned she would misinterpret the gesture, I refrained. "I'm so sorry."
Have you lost anyone?
Yes.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?